The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman on News Talk
with Kia.
Winners and sinners on The Hard Shoulder.
Yes, this is Winners and Sinners, where we look back on the week that was with just a few twists. And this week we are delighted to be joined by Off the Balls, Ger Gilroy, and freelance journalist Niamh O'Reilly. Guys, you're both very welcome.
How are you?
How are you? Ger, we might come to you first. What's your winner?
It has to be Pico Lopez. We talked about this briefly last week, but that was before we knew that it was going to be up against Leo Messi in the knockout stages of the competition. The family, obviously, Aer Lingus stepped in and flew some people over from Dublin. Another Irish-American has stepped in and got a private jet to take the family to Miami. It's like every single step of this gets more and more Hollywood. All they need now is to actually knock Argentina out. And it's Leo Messi in Miami, obviously, where he's been for the last number of years as well. So
almost a home game. It is like a film. I think some, like, it reminds me of like Eddie the Eagle, Cool Runnings. You know one of
the
those kinds.
Kind of,
completely. Yeah. And the it shouldn't have happened, but it did, kind of thing. And it's everything from the LinkedIn DM is like a kind of incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I think it is one of those stories that manages to pull the non-sports fan into the sports event that's happening at the time. And like, we can be very gatekeepery in the sports world about League of Ireland, Gaelic football, golf, tennis. But actually, the more the merrier. That's the whole point of this. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to commune with each other.
I kind of think that's the beauty of the World Cup, because everyone who listens to me on the radio knows I'm not the sport. I'm not the Shane Coleman. I'm not the Ger Gilroy. I don't really have much interest. But even I am interested in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Even I know always who's going to play tonight. Yeah. And even I know who's won or lost. Mm-hmm. Because it's just like a big competition. It kind of transcends sport in a way, doesn't it? It's kind of like human nature. And the underdog story is, imagine if they did beat Argentina.
Oh, guys.
I don't have anything against Argentina.
No, but I'm so
but
up
I would
for,
be exactly.
I'd be jumping around the room like, oh, I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't wait. It is the stuff of films. But like, it's almost like, you know, when you watch a sporting film, like I'm not a huge fan of like, you know, Premiership football or anything like that. But I would absolutely sit down and watch like a film, a sporting film or a football film or American football film, you know, sports that I'm not necessarily into, because it is all of those things. It's normally someone, you know, against the odds, or, you know, someone triumphing, you know, over adversity and the underdog. And we love that as humans.
But that story,
so
like
great.
That story's been, that trope is like everything from, yes, sporting films, but to Harry Potter. Do you know what I mean?
It's in us
to root for the underdog.
Definitely.
And it's in us to hate the
biggie,
the people who have everything going their own way, and all of that. And it is he was a financial
mortgage broker advisor or something. Yeah.
Financial broker.
I think
broker
DBS, yeah.
A couple of years ago, and now he's
playing Messi.
I know.
Unreal.
Must be pinching himself too.
Because they could have got anybody in this round as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have got the USA, and that would have been a great story. It's against the host nation, whatever. But it's actually Leo Messi, who is in incredible form. He's top of the goal scoring charts. And it's him he's actually going up directly against. Like, that's the bit.
Lining out on a pitch. And you know, back when I was played sport in school, like, who are you marking? Who are you marking, Pico?
Yeah.
Messi. Do you know what I mean?
It's the stuff of dreams. Like, you know, when you have those sort of dreams, I don't know if anyone else does this, like when you're in the shower or something like that, or you're dissociating and you're kind of imagining these amazing, you know, scenarios in your head where you're playing your
favourite sport against the top person.
Whatever your sport is.
I could be winning an Oscar or something
exactly,
in the same idea.
That's what you imagine, and he's doing that tonight.
I can't wait for him to come home and all the
it is crazy,
all the interviews we're going to have, because he needs to write a book too, doesn't he? He does.
I do think there will be a film made. I do think that the way that it ends, if it ends, just before kickoff against Messi, and all the family coalescing and how Planes, Trains and Automobiles to get there. Dan McDonald's been doing great stuff covering that story in the Indo. He was, you know, they got a minivan so that they were going to be able to drive around for the three stages, and then suddenly it's like, what do we do now? We have to stay. We obviously have to stay.
Yeah.
Aren't we great though as a nation? We kind of like pull together and make sure, you know, that they got there, and it was great.
Yeah. No, it is great. And you know what's lovely? It's a lovely antidote story. Like, there's been some lovely stories. You mentioned a couple of weeks ago, like the Scottish fans and the baseball dancing to. I went home and watched Yes Sir I Can Boogie. But those kind of stories are the sort of the antithesis of all the stories beforehand about the crazy sort of price of train tickets and stadium tickets and everyone being kind of gouged and the Trumpian, the FIFA, all the negative stories that were all around beforehand. This is the real stuff. This is why people do actually like the World Cup, the little stories.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Why I actually would say that that's why we continue to have sport. It survives almost everything. The worst dictators in human history have all tried to use at one point or another sport for their own ends, and it has managed to slough off the horrific stuff that that they've all done.
There's a reason people sport wash. Do you know what I mean? It's because sport does. Yeah. Sport forgives all in a certain way. Niamh, your winner?
My winner. So this is going to split the listeners, I think, but it is the idea of a silent hairdressing appointment. Now, men and women's hairdressing appointments are very different. Generally speaking, men go into a barber and, I don't know, they might be in for 15 minutes or something like that. It's bish, bash, bosh. You're in and out. And it's quite nice to have a little chat with whoever is doing your hair because it's short.
Yeah.
But in my case, when I go to get my hair done, it could be a 3-hour ass-numbing extravaganza. And it's very difficult to keep up sort of small talk for 3 hours.
With someone you don't know very well,
maybe. With someone you don't know very well. You could have a different person each time you go or something like that. And I just find, like, we need to normalise not having to fill every gap with chatter all the time, especially when it's such a long period of time. And, like, I'm not saying it has to be like a monastery and nobody talks to anybody.
Cloistered nuns. Like,
yeah, you may not speak. It's totally fine to have a little bit of chat, but I feel like clients and the stylists themselves feel under pressure. Like, I can't let there be an awkward silence here. You know, where are you going on your holidays? Are you going out tonight?
That's the cliched question.
They are no more interested in that than, you know, the cat. Like, so I just think it's okay. You don't have to fill every silence with chatter. Unless, of course, you know your hairstylist. Some people go to the same person very regularly. They know their kids, their partners, you know. So it's like seeing a friend.
Here's a question for you, though. Does that need to, when you say that the silent hairdressing, does that need to be a formalised thing where you choose a silent one? Or, like, I find what has always been very effective if I actually know my hairdresser pretty well and I don't mind chatting. But we don't chat the whole way through because it is very long.
It's long.
But we might chat in parts, but if I ever don't want to chat, I just pick up my phone or I pick up my laptop sometimes. And I think once
handy.
I look like I'm doing something,
they don't want to.
It's the rare person, and it has happened, but it is the rare person
like
who you're like trying to get a column deadline or something done, and they keep asking you about your holidays.
I know. And sometimes I feel like they're under pressure. Like, I was getting my hair done. Whenever the last time I got it done, 6 months ago, and there was a power cut in the salon, and it was just at the start of my appointment, so they didn't need hair dryers or anything. They were putting on the colour and all that sort of stuff, and there was two girls doing my hair, and the salon was silent because the power had gone. There was no hair dryers going, there was no radio on, and one of the girls doing my hair was extremely anxious. She was like, I hate the silence. I don't like it. I feel like I have to fill it. Because normally there's so much noise in a hair salon. So for her, it was like an anxious thing that she needed to keep talking to make herself feel at ease. And I just feel like we could just remove that and just feel like you don't have to. Like, you really don't. I think a lot of clients who go in to get their hair done, like, I don't know about anyone else, but I kind of sort of zone out when I sit down in the hairdressing chair for such a long time. And, like, you hear the hair dryers going, and it's almost like a zen sort of thing, and you're almost like staring into space and you're just relaxing, and it's nice, and you don't have to fill it with mindless chatter. So I'm all for this. I don't know if there's many salons doing this in Ireland, but I came across it on TikTok, obviously. And a lot of salons in the States are doing this. And it's like they book a so-called silent.
So it is a formal thing.
It's a drop down, so everybody knows. Like,
yeah, absolutely. I think they're paying a premium for it even. And it's not completely silent. You'll have your pre-consultation, say, I'd like this.
Isn't
how are you?
Isn't it funny that the one that's silent is the more expensive one?
Yeah, no.
So you just say, don't bother, because
So I don't know whether a formalised version of that would take off here, but I do think, you know, I think we need to get the message out. It's okay. You don't have to chat.
Do you have a thought on this, Ger?
Ronnie Drew from the Dubliners was once in the barbers and was asked, how would you like your hair cut, sir? And he said, in complete silence.
I'm with him. I mean, not complete. I do like a few little chats, but I just feel like you don't have
to. I know someone who met Ronnie Drew once in a toilet in a pub at the urinal and said, how are you, Ronnie? And he said, and you can F off. That's what he came to.
Says it like it is.
That's all he came back with. Okay. And they actually were like, good man. Yeah. They were delighted.
God. He wouldn't be the sort of person to ask for a selfie then, so or anything like that.
I don't think he would have enjoyed that. So you think that's fair enough? Yeah, I guess. Is that where we're at now and we don't want to talk to each other anymore?
I think it's interesting that people feel the need to, that they can't exist in silence.
Yeah, that's
that there's an
the
anxiety
part, yeah.
around silence that we're like...
Silence is okay, you know, I feel like...
An attention span issue? Is this
maybe so, like, or feeling stressed about silences. So silences don't always have to be awkward. I think sometimes we need a bit of...
I also think that the three of us more or less talk for a living. There are times when it's very nice not to have to.
Yes. Isn't it lovely? No one asking you anything or not demanding anything, but you can switch your brain off. More or less, you know, which is nice.
We're not going to give you silence now, but we are going to give you a little break from us. Suspiog. Now you're very welcome back to Winners and Sinners. We still have Niamh O'Reilly and Ger Gilroy with us. We're going to hit the sinners part of the evening. Niamh, I'll go to you first. Okay. What's your sinner?
Well, this is quite a niche sinner. I am in the squishies stage of parenting at the moment. So if you don't know what they are, well...
I thought it was a euphemism there for a second.
No. These are actual products. So they're small sort of fidget toys and they're, most of them are relatively cheap, perfect for little kids with pocket money burning a hole in their shorts or their trousers. And they are... some of them look like steamed dumplings. Some of them look like sticks of butter. Some of them look like ice cubes or even cubes of cheese. And they are little squashy things. So you squash them and inside there could be like jelly-like substance. Some are watery, some have beads in them, some are foam.
Are they like a stress ball kind of thing?
Sort of, yeah, but they have evolved into something like this behemoth that I can't stop. They're all over my house. I'm standing on them. They're rolling around the floor. And like when you look at them first, you think this is a clean, nice toy. It's
then,
not going to make
then
a mess.
You touch them.
Yeah. And I can see the appeal. Like I've taken my kids squishies and like in front of the telly, you know, you might squish
you
it.
Squished them.
Yeah, it's a nice thing. Like I like them in theory. And as I said, they are nicer than glitter or kinetic sand or like slime, messy things that get everywhere until they burst. And they do burst because
and
I...
Pray tell what comes out.
Like the most awful goo you can imagine. Like you're holding these things and squashing them and it's a lovely feeling and you're like, wow, the stuff in here must be gorgeous. By and large, it isn't. One of these burst on a long car journey earlier this week and my kid was in the back playing with it and he goes, Mom, it burst. And I was like, oh, okay. So I put my hand back as I was driving, you know, to grab the squishy. And like I was met with this just mass of... It looked like shaving foam, but it didn't feel like shaving foam. It was like sticky and slimy at the same time, and it didn't smell the best. It was revolting stuff. It went on him. It was on the steering wheel. It was on the car.
Oh, God.
It was just all over the place. So great fun, but just beware, they will. Even the best of them will burst at some point.
And how much does a squishy cost?
So they completely vary. And there are certain brands that people really want. There's a brand called Nido, which is this American brand. And it's like the one everyone wants. But then there are a lot of counterfeit versions out there because there's waiting lists for all these Nidos. And then there's these other like steamed dumplings.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. And there's a lot of counterfeits of those. So they can start around maybe 4 or 5 euro, but they can go up to maybe 15 euro depending on the rarity of the squishy and whether
they,
it's legit or not.
Are they? Do they fall into the single-use plastic kind
of? Oh, I'd say so. Yeah,
100%. Yeah, especially the counterfeit.
In some of them.
Some of the insides of the counterfeit ones, the non-brand ones, are have they passed safety? I don't know. And when they do burst,
I wonder, will all
wash
the,
your hands.
All the €3 charges on revenue. Going to put the kibosh on these.
It might, but I don't know. They're just like this trend at the minute that kids want. Like we've had loads of things like this. Like we had Labubus, was it last year? You know, everyone wanted these mad little funny looking fuzzy troll type toys. And these are the next thing. So I assume it's going to fizzle out fairly soon, whether the €3 charge will impact it or not. Something else will come along to replace it.
There's a weird slick oiliness to them.
Yeah,
that you
is.
Touch them and your hand is never clean.
No,
like
it's
you wash
funny.
It and wash
even
it. Like
are they made of some kind of petrochemicals, I'm thinking?
I don't know. I think some of the brands, you know, are they're fine. They pass safety and all that sort of stuff. But just watch out for the
okay.
I'm glad
I am not in this zone for I'm not in the market for a squishy, but I'm kind of glad of that. Jerry, you're a sinner?
Just the general sense of bad design and how we don't really seem to take design seriously. There's a lot of little stories that have happened this week, some big and some not so big. For example, Mountjoy Square, the first time that they planned to refurb it was 2014. They just passed a vote last month. The vote wasn't taken. Some technicality. It's now going to be pushed back again. And basically, it needs refurbished because we put a lot of concrete and asphalt down. And actually, it used to be really nice and it could be really nice again. And this is a tiny little project. There was a piece in the Times today about how 10% of our homes, which doesn't sound that big, but then you think about it, it's like it's actually 500,000 homes not prepared to deal with high temperatures, which we might have a bit more of into the future. The new apartment regulations are actually going to lead to these apartments being incredibly hot for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. And the answer is like, well, let's just get more air conditioning. It's like, well, air conditioning actually burns a lot of electricity, which we haven't really planned for that yet. We're not renewable enough. And so that's the infrastructural issue. And then you're like, well, why can't we just do this? Why can't we just like,
why can't we have nice things?
Exactly.
I feel like a fly against a window, though, or something on this one, that there's so many times I think, why did we do it like that?
It's even down to, so the idea of us having an ice rink in the south of the city, I think, is a brilliant idea. We desperately need it. There's now concerns about the M50 not being able to deal with the traffic.
Oh God, it's so bad there anyway. The traffic there, sorry. I have to get to Bray every day and I have to go through
North
that.
Bray. Something happens. It's like the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh my God. It's the seventh level of hell being stuck in that every day. And can you imagine when there's an ice rink? And gosh, we're going to need like, they are doing something there at that junction at the moment. It looks like they're kind of pile driving, I don't know, to make a flyover or something. But I still think even if you had 6 lanes around there, it still wouldn't be enough because all the little roads off it are all congested and it's all just, there's no planning. There's no forward thinking at all.
And yet we say our planning system is one of the most cumbersome with so many hoops to jump through and one of the slowest planning systems in terms of delivery. Now, I know the planners say we have things like 6-week targets and we hit them. But overall, our ability to plan major infrastructural projects is incredibly drawn out.
It is. And in fairness to the government, they have put a task force in place. And the leader of that task force is in the papers today talking about how they're starting to make some progress on this. That's all grand. But like, what is the angle there is not actually to have everything be nice. The angle there is just to do stuff, right? But shouldn't we go, what actually are we trying to achieve here? We want livable cities. We want good quality public transport. We want a lot of green spaces. We want houses that are going to be fit for purpose for the next 50 years. Like in other countries, they can build houses that can deal with both high and low temperatures. We should get used to that. There's going to be a lot more storms. What's our water system look like? You know, maybe start at the end, work backwards and go, let's make a plan for this. And could it look nice? Would it kill you to make it look nice?
The argument against it looking nice, I suppose, is cost, is
it? Cost a little bit more, maybe. But so I was at the Tate Modern during the week and the building was built to house turbines for power. And they still made it look nice. They're like, this is going to last for hundreds of years. So maybe, you know, for an extra tiny bit, it could look nice. Somebody made the example of the park benches at the moment. There's been a slew of new park benches around Dublin City Centre, and I presume it's everywhere, and they just don't look great. For an extra couple of hundred quid, maybe you would have got nice ones.
Yeah.
And maybe the city begins to look a bit nicer.
Yeah.
I just, you know. Yeah. Buy once, you know, well.
Buy once, buy well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're not wrong. I don't know. I find all of that debate around all of that exhausting because we just don't seem to do this kind of thing well. And other places seem to do it better.
It's maddening.
I think we're suspicious of anybody with a vision.
They've got notions.
You could be true, because we're mad for the tall poppy syndrome here. Mm-hmm. Like we are. I often think we think we're liberal. And we used to be conservative, but I don't think we're either. I think we're conformist. Mm-hmm. I think when we were conservative, we were all conservative, and any liberal was viewed with deep suspicion. And now we're all liberal, and any conservative is viewed with deep suspicion. I think all it actually is we're a small island mentality, and we conform, and we don't like dissent. Mm-hmm. So when someone is visionary, we are, as you say, very wary.
Because good design would actually solve a lot of the problems.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's depressing at this time on a Friday evening.
It is. And it's like, it's such a simple solution, really, you know, to a lot of these things.
Is it if we can't seem to solve it? I don't know. I think we have a funny mindset. I think there's a mindset here that...
Well, look, the Mountjoy Square thing was mad. So they thought that the money was about to run out. So they said, look, we need to make the vote on this, otherwise the money's going to run out. They got that wrong. The money was going to run out eventually if... You know, the timing was wrong, and they're like, "Well, I'm gonna take a legal action now because you said that." I'm like, "Come on!" Oh, meanwhile, the people of Mountjoy Square are looking out, and it's like, "This could be really nice. It's a really nice facility. The inner city desperately needs a little bit of a." Mm-hmm. And now it could be 2028.
Those old squares, Mountjoy Square, was obviously built in the same era as Fitzwilliam, as Merrion, and all that. They are so beautiful
so
grand,
yeah,
and so elegant in their design that I don't. Anyway, I think we will have to take a break now because we are all utterly depressed. But we'll be back to cheer you up with more Winners and Sinners after this.
Ignition sequence start.
This is the last bit of the show.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
Yes, it is the last part of the show, and you are back with Winners and Sinners. We are still joined by Ger Gilroy and Niamh O'Reilly, and we're going to hear from our Any Other Business. Ger, what's your Any Other Business?
The Bear season 5. I've been watching this. I haven't quite finished it yet, so I'm promising no spoilers.
Oh, great,
The first 5 or 6 episodes are all about 24 hours. It's like Ulysses. And I don't know
Or if you're less highbrow, The Pit.
Yeah.
Or maybe 24, if you're even less highbrow again.
I think anybody who's watched it will remember the seven fishes episode.
Yes, yeah. The Christmas one.
Yeah, so that was the most intense
piece of television.
This is basically 5 or 6 episodes as intense.
Like, I can't wait.
So, yeah.
Oh, that was like, have you seen that episode, the Christmas
I have
one?
To say I bailed on The Bear halfway through season 1.
No.
Do you know why? Because it was just too
intense.
Too stressful to watch.
It's not relaxing, that's true. You will be sort of like holding your chair.
I actually got some palpitations during it, and I felt that I needed to somehow step in.
I went,
not for me at the moment. Now, maybe I will go back because everyone says it's brilliant.
Yeah.
And so I'm not averse to that, but at the time I watched it, I just wasn't able.
Yeah.
I love watching stuff when you, at the end, you know this is the last season and you know there's not going to be any more, so you can commit to it for a period of time and then it's done. This was one of those where, was there one year they actually released it week on week? I was like, I can't be doing that. But this one, in fairness, the whole box set has dropped and we're flying through it. I just like the food as well.
Yeah,
the food
it's beautiful,
is
isn't
like,
it?
Oof.
Disney did a nice little PR drop that I was on the receiving end of, where they gave the recipe book from The Bear. They have all the recipes
no
in
way.
There. Yeah, it's quite cool.
Did you make any yet?
No, I didn't. But I like the
book. Yes, Jeff.
And I thought about making things from
but
it.
But you didn't.
No, I did not. Niamh, what's your Any Other Business?
My Any Other Business, again, it's a little bit niche. I don't know if everyone is familiar with this, but there is a viral song at the moment called the Puerto Rico Song. And I'm sorry if you know it, because now it's in your head and you've probably tried to forget it.
It's the AI song, isn't it?
You see, okay, so I heard this song and someone sent it to me, actually. I didn't seek it out. Someone sent it to me and I was like, why did you send me this? It's such an earworm, you know? It's one of those viral summer songs, like, I don't know, the Macarena or the Ketchup song, or even going back further, the Spitting Image, you know, Chicken song. Do you remember that totally bonkers song? So like, they're not particularly, you know, classic songs or anything like that, or brilliant songwriting, but they're viral earworms for the summer. So I listened to this and I was like, yeah, great 80s vibe to this. I love it. But then when I Googled it, it's not even from a songwriter. It's from this guy. He's a travel content creator and comedian known as Sax Boy Billy. And he basically goes around traveling to places and he just put these lyrics that he wrote into an AI program and it spat out this song. I was shocked. I was like, oh my God, I felt dirty for sort of liking this AI.
Didn't you give out about AI posters?
I was very militant. I was like, never use AI posts. AI is bad. And here I was rocking out, like embarrassing mum dancing to the Puerto Rico song. And it's AI.
I have only seen this song online with, like, I don't know, little videos of like fat hamsters dancing to it or something.
Is it real fat hamsters?
I love your algorithm.
I think they also might be AI. Because they're on their back legs.
What else are you watching?
And some of them have small sombreros. It's actually very possibly racist. I have no idea.
It's all wrong, yeah.
Yeah, all wrong. But that's the only way I've seen it. Jerry, are you familiar with the Puerto Rico?
No.
I'm sorry I've introduced this to you because you will go and Google it now.
I'm looking at the video with the sound on. I actually don't think I'm going to listen to it now. On your warning, okay. I'm going to avoid it. Yeah.
But you're going to be singing it for the next 3 weeks. Yeah. I think we will have to wrap on that. I think we might actually leave you with the Puerto Rico song.
I'm so sorry.
But thank you to Niamh O'Reilly and to Jerry Gilroy. Enjoy your weekend. Off the Balls up next. Do stay tuned. Fantastic weekend of sports coverage, including all the World Cup stuff. But we will be back on the airways on Monday at 4 with The Hard Shoulder. Have a great weekend.
The Hard Shoulder with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman. With Kia. Weekdays at 4 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.